All right, so we're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. We're actually in the middle of the Mishnah. The line begins below Mistapkin, so about 15 or 20 lines from the bottom. We were in the middle of listing. The Mishnah was in the middle of listing things that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, and you're also not allowed to do on Yom Tov, Midrabanan. We said there were three categories. There's Mishum Shvus, things that are also, as the Chachamim told you not to do it, but there's no mitzvah involved. Mishum Rishus, same thing. The Chachamim said not to do it, but there's a certain degree of a mitzvah involved, but not a full-fledged mitzvah. The third category is where there's a full-fledged mitzvah. So the first group, we said, were things including, like, climbing up trees, riding on animals, swimming, clapping, slapping your hands on your legs to the music, and dancing. And by the way, Rabbi Hanan will bring here in connection with that business about clapping. So we talked about yesterday why it is that we're not, why it is that we're allowed to dance and clap and sing on Shabbos and Yom Tov nowadays. But, the Yerushalmi brings a story about this, Rabbi Hanan brings it, that by the wedding of, so it's like this. The Yerushalmi says, in Eretz Yisrael, they had the minhag, in the times of the Tanoim, because of this, because you're not allowed to clap in the regular way on Shabbos, they would clap with the backs of their hands instead, as a shinui. But Reb Meir held that that's still aser, so as part of this gzeira. So the Yerushalmi tells that by the wedding of Rebbe's son, Reb Shimon, they were clapping. Apparently, the wedding itself wasn't taking place on Shabbos, but I guess one of the Sheva brachas was. They were clapping like that with the backs of their hands and wearing iron. Reb Meir passed by outside and he heard them clapping like that. He calls out, Rabbi Senu, what is Shabbos mutter? Meaning, in other words, are you allowed to do this on Shabbos? You're not supposed to do it that way. And Rebbe, here, good morning, Yaakov. Rebbe then hears the voice of Reb Meir, and he doesn't recognize that it's Reb Meir, who has the chutzpah to come and tell us to, Mizab Shabalu Deisenu, Besech Deisenu, who's gonna come and tell us off in our own house that we're doing wrong. So he went out to see who it was, and Reb Meir, meanwhile, was running away, so Rebbe only saw him from the back. So later on, Rebbe said, the reason why that I was Zoich at the Torah is because I had this chutz to see the back of Reb Meir. So that's a little story over there, but illustrating the idea about not clapping on Shabbos, and according to the mayor, not even clapping with a shimmy. Again, as like we talked about yesterday, and we talked about previously on Yisruchag, there are reasons to say that nowadays it's mutter. You have Tosfos' reason that nowadays we're not expert in making clay shear. You have Rabbi Hai going that you're allowed to do it on Simchas Torah, mitzad the cupboard of the Torah, and then you have the Minchas Elazar's point that extends to other times during the year when you feel that degree of simcha as well. Anyway, that's where we're holding in the middle of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah continues, Ve'elohein Mishum Rishus. The following things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, Midrabanan, they are Rishus. They're not full-fledged mitzvahs, but they are, there's a certain degree of a mitzvah in there. Loi Dunin, you're not allowed to judge a Din Torah. Veloi Mekadshin, or to the Mekadish a woman. Veloi Chiltin, or not Yuchalitza, Veloi Miyadnin. And we'll see in the Gemara for each of them why not. The Elohim, the Gemara is also going to ask, I mean, judging a Din Torah is a mitzvah, Yibum is a mitzvah, Chalitza is a mitzvah, so we'll get back to that then. So in other words, why are they on the list of Rishus? The Elohim Mishum Mitzvah, and then the following things are also, even though they involve a full-fledged mitzvah, Loi Makdishin, you're not allowed to be Makdish something, too hektish, on Yom Tov. And on Shabbos we're saying, although the poskim say an exception to that is you are allowed to, you make a mishaberach and shul, and you're saying babasher sheyitin bli neder tzedakah or X amount of tzedakah, you're allowed to do that on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. The Gemara in Shabbos tells us poskim tzedakah, you're allowed to fix amounts that you're going to give for tzedakah on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But here we're talking about to be makdish something to the Bais Hamikdash. You can't do that on Shabbos and Yom Tov. V'loi ma'arichin, you can't declare, I pledge to give the erech of myself or somebody else to the Bais HaMikdash, which is also something that you're giving to Hekdash. V'loi ma'chrimin, or to make something cherem, where there's two kinds of cherem, but stam charamin, l'bedek habayis, Rashi says, that when you say a cherem, unspecified, means go to bedek habayis, so it's another form of Hekdash. There's actually machloikas about that point, whether stam charamin, l'bedek habayis, or stam charamin, l'kayinim, but anyway. So you're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov or on Shabbos. The in magbin truma and meiser, and you're not allowed to take off truma and meiser. Again, we'll see in the Gemara why not. why all those things not. Kol elu b'yomtiv amru, all these things, the Chacham said, you're not allowed to do on yomtiv, kal b'choymer b'shabbos, how much more so you're not allowed to do them on Shabbos. It's interesting, actually, because the Mishnah had started by saying that these things, which it's also, which the Chachamim asked on Shabbos, you should know they're also on Yom Tov. And here the Mishnah seems to be saying the other way around. These things are also on Yom Tov and Kal V'Chomer on Shabbos. So what is it? Is it primarily on Shabbos or primarily on Yom Tov? So there's a number of explanations, one of them being that the Tosfos Yom Tov says that the Mishnah may also be hint when it started off by saying things that are also on Shabbos or also on Yom Tov. It means not just the things that are listed in the Mishnah, but various others, Surim Dirabanan, that are not listed over here, which are also on Shabbos and on Yom Tov. Now, as far as the specific list we're saying over here, once you realize they're also on Yom Tov, you should realize that Alachas Kama V'Kama, they're also on Shabbos. And so the Mishnah finishes off. Ein Ben Yom Tov L'Shabbos Ela Oichol Nefesh Bilvad. The only difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is Oichol Nefesh, meaning Melechas Oichol Nefesh, that you're allowed to do, as we've been learning throughout the Masechta, certain Melechas that have to do with the preparation of food. Pointing of Yehuda, we said you're also allowed to do Machshira Oichol Nefesh. Anyway, in fact, the Gemara in Megillah, where it also the Mishnah in Megillah also has this Mishnah, and the Gemara explains that the Mishnah wants to tell us, not like Rabbi Yehuda, because according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not just Oichol Nefesh, it's also Machshira Oichol Nefesh. But we'll see more, we'll see a little bit about a related topic in the Gemara over here. There is, by the way, a vort on this from Rav Zusha Anipaler. He says, and we've talked about before, the idea that on Yom Tov, if a person just eats and drinks, has a nice Yom Tov Suda, but closes up his door and doesn't invite people, then he's not accomplishing the mitzvah of Simchas Yom Tov. The Rambam phrases it, he says, has Simchas Kresa, this is the joy of his stomach. On the other hand, the Rambam doesn't say any such thing about Shabbos, and in fact, the Zohar, much earlier, of course, from Rav Shimon ben Yochai, says the same thing, that Peres Shabbatchem Lo Ka'amar, the Navi criticizes the Jewish people for indulging on Yom Tov, but he doesn't say anything, any such thing on Shabbos. So in other words, there's the idea that Shabbos itself, that we talk about in connection with the Neshama Yisera, that the eating on Shabbos itself is on a higher level, even independent of, obviously it's good to have guests and then invite poor people and on Shabbos as well, but that's, you know, you don't need, unlike on Yom Tov, it's not as essential to fulfilling the mitzvah in full. So therefore, Rav Zusha said on this, that's what the Mishnah hints over here, Ein ben Yom Tov l'Shabbos ala oichol nefesh bilvad, where on Yom Tov you need to have, the oichol is where on Shabbos you have, the oichol itself accomplishes something for your nefesh, even independent of achnosas oichol and tzedakah, whereas on Yom Tov it's not so. So the Gemara starts off, let's go through the list of things that we said in the Mishnah and see why each of them is also Derabanan. Loi Olin Be'ilon, so you're not allowed to climb up a tree. Gzeira Shema Yitloish, the reason is the Chachamim made Gzeira, because you might tear off a branch while you're going up. Loi Reich Min Agave Behema, you're not allowed to ride on an animal. So that would be Gzeira Shema Yitzeh Chut B'Tchum. Because Gzeira, because you might ride the animal outside the Tchum. Because, after all, Rashi says, when a person is walking, he's more likely to notice. They used to have, in those days, they would have markers at the edge of the tchum showing where the tchum is. But if you're riding on an animal, you're more likely to overlook those. So Gemara says, Shmamin a tchumim daraisa. So what are you telling me based on that, that tchumim are daraisa? If the issue of going outside the tchum itself is dirabanan, then to make a gzera, not to ride on an animal, because you might go outside the tchum, would be a gzera la gzera. And we know the Chachamim don't do that. So no, Alexander Shami Yachtech Zmurda. Rather, the reason you're not allowed to ride on an animal is because you might cut off a branch from a tree to use to lead the animal. Shotin up Mayim, you're not allowed to swim on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. The reason is Xader Shami Yasa Shobis Shoshayotin. Because Xader, because he might make a Chobis Shoshayotin, which is a Keli. What is a Chobis Shoshayotin? Rashi defines that it's a keli made out of reeds that are woven together. You make it into like a long barrel. So chavis means a barrel. So it's a long, narrow barrel shape, and you learn to swim inside it. Tosfos disagrees with that and says that no, it's a flotation device. You take a kli cheres, you take a sealed up kli cheres, and therefore, because it's got air inside, therefore it's buoyant and it won't sink, and therefore, and you hold on to that while you're swimming, like the flotation devices that they have nowadays. Either way, the idea is one. Either way, the point is, in other words, that a person might make such a keli on Shabbos, and therefore swimming is also. There are certain details in that. Technically, swimming is allowed in certain kinds of bodies of water, like a swimming pool where it has a lift. But basically, the idea is because of this, basically, where it's also, it's because of this Chavis Shosha Yachim thing. Okay, you said, Velema Tapkin, Velema Sapkin, Velema Rapkin. You're not allowed to clap your hands or slap your hands on your thighs to the music or dance. And the reason is, Gzeir Shem Yisakin Klei Shir, a Gzeir because you might come to fix musical instruments. Again, as we talked about, Tosfos on Daf Lamed said that nowadays we don't have that expertise, and therefore not that reason doesn't necessarily apply. We said in the mission of the Elohim Mishum Rishus, we said the following things are also on Yom Tov where they involve Rishus. They're not a full-fledged mitzvah, but there's a degree of a mitzvah involved. The first one was Loi Donin. You're not allowed to judge a Din Torah. So the question is, why are we calling that Rishus? Well, a mitzvah ka'avid. Aren't you accomplishing a mitzvah? Judging a Din Torah is one of the 613 mitzvahs. The answer is Loi Tzricha De'ika De'odit Minei. The point is that the Mishnah is telling us, if suppose that you have somebody in town who's more expert than you, who's more capable of judging the Din Torah. So for him, maybe it would be called a mitzvah. For you, it's Rishus. And the point is, Rashi says, not according to Rashi, it doesn't matter. It's not like either way, it's not like if it was a mitzvah, you would be allowed to do it. Just the reason why the Mishnah puts it under the category of Rishus is because it's not always a mitzvah. It may well be a Rishus. It's a mitzvah if you're the most qualified, and it's a Rishus if you're not quite as qualified. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi on that. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Tam that actually the question of the Gemara is, given that it's a mitzvah to judge and to do each of these other things that we're mentioning, why did the Chachamim answer it at all? And the answer is, with each one of them, as we're going to see, that in fact, when there is a full-fledged mitzvah, it would be allowed. When we're saying it's not allowed is when it's Rishus. So Kiddush HaChodesh is a special case. You're allowed to break Shabbos. Even the Edom can go to tell Beis Din. But you were talking about the Beis Din themselves. Fine. So they can sit in the Kiddush HaChodesh if it's Shabbos. Sure. But we're talking about regular Dinei Torah. But anyway, Rabbi Natan learned that, yes, if there is an actual mitzvah involved, then you would actually be able to do it on Shabbos and Yom Tov. We talked about yesterday the story with the Rama of the delayed wedding on Friday that went into Shabbos, where he ended up telling them, go ahead and hold the wedding. And afterwards, he wrote a tshuva justifying it. One of the sources he brought to bear was the Rabbeinu Tam here in Tosfos, that when there's a mitzvah involved, and in that case, there was a mitzvah of Rishus Yisoma and so forth, and that gave more of a heter to do that, even though it was Shabbos. Okay. We said in the mission of Eloi Mekadshin that you're not allowed to Mekadish a woman on Shabbos. So again, the question is, v'ha mitzvah ka'avid, aren't you accomplishing a mitzvah? Again, according to Rashi, the question is not that you should be allowed to if it's a mitzvah, but why is the mission of putting it under the Rishus category? According to Tosfos, the question is, where there's a mitzvah to be done, maybe indeed you should be allowed to do it on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And the answer is, loitzricha de'isla isha obonim. Yes, but the Mishnah is talking about a case where he already has a wife and children. He's already accomplished the mitzvah of kruavu. So yes, he does have a little bit of a mitzvah because you have the concept that Gemara tells us in Yevamos based on a pasuk, ba'burka zras zarecha v'la erev al-tanach gedecha. The pasuk says in Kehelis, in the morning plant your seeds, and in the evening don't let your hands slacken. In other words, it means the morning and evening of a person's life, even though a person has been mekayim peri v'rivya. There's still a mitzvah to have more children because you never know which ones are going to be the best ones. Nevertheless, though, nevertheless, it's not as strong a mitzvah as pruavu. So once he's been mekayim pruavu, then for him to be mekadesh, another wife would be a second wife would be less of a mitzvah than otherwise. We said, loy chiltzin v'loy miyadmin. He's not allowed to do chalitza or yibum on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Again, the question is, v'ha mitzvah ka'ovid. And the answer is, loy tzricha de'ika gadol. The answer is, we're talking about where you have an older brother who mitzvah begadol liyadmin. The fact is, the ideal mitzvah is that the oldest brother should be the one to do yibum. If he doesn't want to, then any of the other brothers can do it. The Shittim Mokobetis points out, by the way, he says, that's not true as far as chalitza. When it comes to chalitza, he says, they're all on an equal level. So he says the Gemara is not really asking about chalitza; it's primarily asking about yibum. Of course, it's true that chalitza is a mitzvah as well, but we're talking about over here when we're explaining why it's under the rishus list, then we're mainly focusing on yibum. Where again, yibum can be more of a rishus rather than a mitzvah, namely if the eldest brother doesn't want to do it. So, the Kuluru time am I. So now, with all of these things that you're not allowed to judge a Din Torah and be Makadesh and do Chalitza and Yibum, time am I. What's the reason why not to do them? And why did the Chachamim ask for them on Shabbos and Yom Tov? And the reason is Zeder Shemi Yichtev, because you might write. You're going to write a Psak Din for the Din Torah. You're going to write a Shtar Erisin, a Shtar Chalitza, Suba. So therefore, don't do it. And Mepharshim point out, by the way, I mean, on the face of it, you shouldn't be allowed to be Makadish, to be Makadish a woman on Yom Tov anyway, because Ein Ma'ariv and Simcha B'Simcha. The answer is, let's say we're talking about over here on Rosh Hashanah, where there's no particular mitzvah of Simcha then. Also, on the first night of Yom Tov, where we learned in Sukkah, that the real primary mitzvah of Simcha begins only by day. The Ach excludes the first night of Yom Tov, we said. So therefore, the point is, you can't even be Mekadosh then, even though there's no particular mitzvah of Simcha, nevertheless, you have the Gzeder Shem Yichtev. Okay, we said in the mission of Elohein Mishum Mitzvah, the following things are also, even though they're a real, full-fledged mitzvah, Loi Makdishin, you're not allowed to be Makdish something, Loi Ma'arichin, or to pledge an Erech to the Beis HaMikdash, Loi Machrimin, or to pledge a Cherem to Hekdish, and the reason with all of them, Gzeder Mishum Mecha Chomemker, the Chomer Gzeder, because you might come to do business on Shabbos and Yom Tov, because those things are very similar to business. You're taking something out of your Rishus and putting it into the Rishus of Hekdesh. Now, Nekach Memker itself is also, what the grounds on which that's also. First of all, Rashi says, so we know you're not allowed to talk and do business on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Also, it may lead to writing a Shtar Mechira. You're going to say it's a Gzeira L'Gzeira. Rashi says it's all part of one Gzeira. In other words, when the Chachamim made the Gzeira on Mekach HaMemker in the first place, they included in that to also not do Mekach HaMemker with Hekdesh, such as pledging something to Hekdesh, etc. Okay, we said, V'loimak b'in Trumas HaMaisers, you're not allowed to take out Truma and Maiser on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So the question is, Pshita, isn't that obvious? Now, why should it be so obvious? One reason, first of all, because it is similar to Mekach, so there's two reasons. First of all, again, it is similar to Mekach HaMemker. You're taking it out of your Rishus and putting it into the Rishus of the Kohen or the Levi. The other point is, also, it's Mesakin. You're fixing up the fruit. Before it was not edible, and now it's edible. So therefore, you're Mesakin, you're fixing it in a way that you shouldn't do on Shabbos and Yom Tov. In fact, there's a Tosfos elsewhere in Gittin that points out, even when you don't have the issue of taking it out of your Rishus. For example, we know that you're allowed to take Truma and Maisa b'machshava. You're allowed to think to yourself, you have a pile of fruit in front of you, and you think to yourself, the fruit on this side should be Truma, the fruit on that side should be Maisa Rishin, etc. You're not actually taking anything out. Nevertheless, you still have the problem of the Sakin, and therefore on those grounds itself it should be also. So anyway, so it's poshut that you can't take the Truma and Maisa on Shabbos and Yom Tov. And the answer is, Tony Rabbi Yosef, lo nitzrucha lo litna l'koyen boi b'yoyim. Rabbi Yosef taught a b'raisa that it means even if you're going to be giving them to the koyen that day. So you might argue it's not so obvious you're doing it in order for the purpose of tikkun to be able to eat the fruit. You're doing it because you're doing it because people see you bringing the truma to the koyen. So people figure, you know, you want to give the koyen a present of food on Yom Tov, as we learned in the first perek, that you're allowed to do that. Nevertheless, we're still saying it's also to do that. Now that only applies to fruit or produce, which was already tevel from the day before. And therefore you could have taken Truma and Maaser from the day before, therefore the Chacham tell you don't do it on Shabbos and Yom Tov. But if you have produce which became tevel only today, for example, you made a batch of dough on Yom Tov, and that of course is mutter. It's one of the melachas ochel nefesh that's mutter on Yom Tov, and we learned before it's not one of those things you could say you could do it the day before because you want to have hot, fresh bread on Yom Tov. And once you're doing that, then the Chachamim are also going to allow you to take off challah for the same reason. In Eretz Yisrael, you have to, because otherwise you can't even eat the bread. And in chutzah, that's fine. In principle, you could eat it and take off the challah afterwards, but nevertheless, the Chachamim will still allow you to designate the challah. So that kind of thing, makushin and viavin and the koyin. So sure, you can take off the challah on Yom Tov and give it to a koyin. That's an exception to the rule. So now that we've gone through the whole list of things in the Mishnah, the Gemara asks, why are we dividing them into three groups? Vahani, Mishum Rishus Ika, Mishum Shvus Leka. Let's look at the second group. We said you're not allowed to do a Din Torah or Kiddushin, etc. By the way, I forgot to mention, as for an interesting point, as far as Kiddushin being a mitzvah, the Rambam Taka lists as one of the 613 mitzvahs. They asked Rabbeinu Avraham ben Rambam, in what way is that a mitzvah? I mean, the mitzvah is pruhu. In what way is Kiddushin itself a mitzvah? And he explained what the Rambam means is the whole procedure of Kiddushin and Nisuin and the first Bia and so forth is all part of the mitzvah, that it is a prerequisite, all of that together is a prerequisite for Pruvu, and therefore all of that together, the mitzvah to get married as a whole, is a mitzvah, and then after that you have the mitzvah of Pruvu. So the question is, in that second group, why is the Mishnah saying that they're Mishum Rishus, implying that there's no shavus? Bahani mishum rishus ika mishum shavus leka. The second group, is it only a matter of rishus? Is there not a matter of shavus? In other words, the fact is the chachamim said they're osir. So why are we saying that these are ve'elohen mishum rishus, as if it implies the problem with them is only rishus, the problem with them is not shavus? And the same thing the last group, Bahani Mishum Mitzvah Ikka Mishum Shavus Leka, the same thing with the third group. You're saying that they're also, these are things that are a mitzvah, to be Makdish and Marich and so forth. Why are we saying that these are Mishum Mitzvah, implying that there's no Shavus involved? Of course there's a Shavus involved. The Chachamim are the ones who said, you're not allowed to do them. So Rabbi Yitzchok says, right, what the Mishnah means is, it's one of these needless to say things. Of course, all three groups are also as Shavus. That's the point of our Mishnah. But what it means is loy midboya shvus greatest of the osir, needless to say, a plain shvus where there's no lachluchis of a mitzvah in it. There's no trace of a mitzvah in it. For example, climbing up a tree. So not only those are osir, el afilu shvus to rishus nami osir. You should know, even when it's a derabanan involving a rishus. For example, to be makter. For example, to judge a din torah, be makadish a woman, etc. Is nami also, such things are also osir for the reasons that we said, because you might come to right. The loy midboy is shvus to rishus to osir, and not only is a shvus involving a rishus osir, like those, el afilu, shvus to mitzvah, nami osir, you should know that even the ones involving mitzvahs, such as the ones about not being makdish and marich and so forth, are also osir. But the Mishnah doesn't mean to imply that any of them are not mishum shvus. Yes, all of them are mishum shvus. Some of them are mishum shvus. Even the chiddush is, even though there's also mitzvah, or there's also rishus, or also mitzvah involved, nevertheless, you're still not allowed to do that. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, kol elu b'yomtev amru, we said that all these things apply on yomtev, and how much more so on Shabbos, and the Mishnah continues, that there's no ein dein yomtev l'shabbos, elo oichel nefesh bilvad, that there's no difference between yomtev and Shabbos, except for oichel nefesh. So the question is, Uraminu, what do you mean the only difference between Shabbos and Yom Tov is Oichel Nefesh, if you're allowed to do Melechus Oichel Nefesh on Yom Tov and not on Shabbos? Uraminu, I have a contradiction. The first Mishnah of our Perek says, Mashilim Derech Aruba B'Yom Tov, Avaloi B'Shabbos. You're allowed to throw down fruit on Yom Tov from the through the skylight, but you're not allowed to on Shabbos. So we see that there's a shvus Shabbos that does not apply on Yom Tov. Now Tosfos explains, in other words, obviously the Gemara knows that there's a difference between things Daraisa and Derabanan. But the point is that here in our Mishnah, we're giving a whole list of shvusim, and then we're finishing off and saying Ein ben Yom Tov l'Shabbos. So how does that fit with there, where we see that there's a shavus, which is also on Shabbos, but not on Yom Tov? And that has nothing to do with, it has to do with Oichel Nefesh, of course, because it's food, but still, it's not directly related to any of the shavusim that we said in our Mishnah. Amar Rav Yosef, like Kasha Harav Eliezer Harav Yeshua. The difference is, when we say Ein Ben Yom Tov l'Shabbos, meaning, in other words, that in general, any shvus that applies on Shabbos and applies on Yom Tov, even if there would be hefsed mamon, that would be according to Rabbi Eliezer. On the other hand, when we said mashil and peiros, that would be according to Rabbi Yeshua. The Tanya, because we learn in a braisa, mashil and peiros, when we said we can throw down fruit through the skylight, the first mission of our parakeet. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa, oisaves b'noi shenoflo labur. Suppose that a mother animal and a baby animal, her baby, together, fell into a pit. Now, the problem is if it was two unrelated animals, no problem. You could hold them both out, and you could hold them both out, and you could shecht them. The problem is you're not allowed to shecht. So inevitably, when you take them out, there's going to be one, that you're not going to be able to shecht. So what do? Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Mala Sarishin Amanas L'Sheichtei. So Rabbi Eliezer says you bring up the first one, whichever one you want, the mother or the baby, doesn't matter. In having in mind that you're going to shecht it, fine, not you're allowed to do because Malechas Eichel Nefesh, V'Sheichtei, and you indeed shecht it. What about the second one? Ba'Sheini, the second one you can't bring up because now you're not going to be allowed to shecht it. Oisale Parnosa V'Mekoymei, arrange the send down food for it where it is, Kadesh Lo Yomu, so it doesn't die down there in the pit, but you're not allowed to schlep it out there, out of there on Yom Tov, says Rabbi Yezir. Rabbi Yeshua, Emer Rabbi Yeshua says no. Mala Sarishin Amanas L'Shechtei, you can bring up the first one having in mind that you're going to shecht it, the Einai Shechtei, and then you don't actually shecht it. You change your mind and say, you know what, I'd rather have the other one. Then you make a harama. You say, you know what? I decided this one is too scrawny or whatever. I don't want this one. I'd prefer the other one. And then you bring a then you use that as a basis to bring up the second one. Now that you have them both out of the pit, then you can shecht either one you want. So we see that Rabbi Yeshua allows you something that would be normally osim mishum shavus to haul the animal out of there because there's a hefsed moment, and therefore he allows you to do that. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer not. So therefore the Mishnah about Mashil and Peres, one second, would be according to Rabbi Yeshua on Mishnah that seems to imply that that doesn't work because there's no difference when it comes to shavusim between Yom Tov and Shabbos except Eichel Nefesh would be according to Rabbi Eliezer. Yeah. What?
What? Once you have both of them in front of you, what happens to the Esves Benoi? Why should you be allowed to check both of them?
You're allowed to check one of them.
Yeah, but not one both of them.
No, not both of them. That's the point. Rabbi Yeshua is saying what made it mutter for you to bring them both out is you brought up the first one saying, I'm going to bring out that first one and I'm going to shecht it. Then after it's out, you say, you know what, I changed my mind. I'd actually rather shecht the other one. And then you bring it out. By the way, you do actually have some Rishonim that learn in what Rabbi Yeshua said. First of all, the halacha is like Rabbi Yeshua. Against Rabbi Eliezer. There are Rishonim who learn in what Rabbi Yeshua is saying that even that you actually don't end up having to shecht either one of them. You could even, once you had a heter on this basis to bring them both up, because you could shecht them. Once you do that, then you're allowed to say at that point, you know what, I decided actually I don't want to shecht either one of them. And by that point, they've already been brought out. On the other hand, many Rishonim disagree with that. They say the only way you're going to be mutter to get them both out is at least if you shecht one of them in the end. However, the flip side of that is what if you have two animals that are not related? So you don't have the issue of oisives noi, but suppose they fell in. You want to get them out, but you don't really want to shecht either one of them. So then, so the Alter Rebbe talks about, the Alter Rebbe mentions in the Puntos Achron, in Hilchos Yom Tov, then you actually would be allowed to use Rabbi Yeshua's Harama and then not shecht either one of them. You would be allowed to say, I'm going to bring out the first one intending to shecht it, and then you change your mind and say, you know what, I'd rather bring out the second one, and now, because they're not oisev es benoi, then you're allowed to get away with now not shechting either one of them. If it's oisev es benoi, though, then you have that limitation, as many of the Rishonim say, that you do end up having to shecht one of them, because the difference is, with oisev es benoi, because the difference is with regular animals, conceivably you could shecht both of them. So you could argue you didn't really need the harama in the first place. You would be perfectly allowed to shecht both of them if you needed a lot of meat. Only with oisev es benoi do you have that limitation where you can't, and therefore you need Rabbi Yeshua's harama, and therefore the only way to make it work ultimately is to actually eventually shecht one of them. Otherwise the harama is too transparent. But the Alter Rebbe says with two regular animals you don't have that issue. Anyway, so the Gemara wants to say now that. So again, Rabbi Yosef wants to say that the first Mishnah of our Perek goes like Rabbi Yeshua, and the end of our second Mishnah goes like Rabbi Eliezer. Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says, Mimai, who says that that's the correct explanation? How do you know that Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer's machloikas about Oisev es benoi would directly map onto this question of Mashilin Peres? Dilma ad kan lekomer Rabbi Eliezer hosam. Maybe you could say, you know why Rabbi Eliezer says in the oisev es benoi case that you leave one of them in the pit. Mr. Elad Efshar b'parnasa, because you have an alternative. Rabbi Eliezer is going to say, fine. I mean, you don't have to schlep out. The animal is not necessarily going to die in there. You send down food. You take care of it down there in the pit. You have an alternative rather than schlepping it out. aval hocha, but when it comes to the fruit that's on the roof and it's about to rain, deloy efshe b'parnosa, there's no alternative like that. You're either throwing it down through the skylight or it's going to get ruined altogether. Right. Maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Eliezer would agree that you are allowed to throw it down. Inami, and vice versa. You could also say, ad kam l'ka'om Rabbi Yeshua hasam, ela de'efshe l'yarumi. You know why Rabbi Yeshua would allow it by the case of Oysev Espinoi? Because you have a way of making harama where at least on the surface it seems that you're doing something completely mutter. Namely, that you're taking the second one out, saying, you know what, I decided I don't want to shech the first one after all. Aval hocha, but here, when it comes to the mashil and peiris, deloy efshe l'arumi, there's no haroma possible. It's obvious that you're throwing it down in order to save your fruit. So loy, maybe not. Maybe Rabbi Yeshua would agree that you're not allowed to. So not necessarily is Mashil and Peiris something that only Rabbi Yeshua would say is allowed and Rabbi Eliezer would not. Maybe both of them would agree it's allowed. Maybe both of them would agree it's not allowed. So we're still back to the question then that Mashil and Peiris implied that there's a certain shvus, which is also on Shabbos, but mutter on Yom Tov, whereas our Mishnah seems to be implying that there's no difference between them except Malachas Eichel Nefesh. So Ella, I'm going to pop like Kasha Hobbes Shammai Hobbes Hillel. Rather, what it is that the Mishnah about Mashil and Peiris is according to Bes Hillel, the Ein Ben Yom Tov the Shabbos is according to Bes Shammai. The Tanan, namely, we learned in the first parak of our Masechta, Bes Shammai Omim Ein Metziyim Lois HaKotin V'Lois HaLulo V'Lois Sefer Torah Lo Shosarabim. Bes Shammai says you're not allowed, even though you're allowed to carry food on Yom Tov, that's Malach HaSechel Nefesh, but they don't hold a mitoich, we said, so they say you can't carry out a child or a lulav or a Sefer Torah Lo Shosarabim, or Bes Hillel Matirin, and Bes Hillel says it's Mutter. So you see. Or Siddur, yeah. So we see that Beis Shammai does not hold, so Beis Shammai holds that strictly Melechas Eichel Nefesh is allowed, nothing else, whereas Beis Hillel says more than that. So the Ein Vein Yom Tov L'Shabbos would be according to Beis Shammai. On the other hand, the Gemara says, still, Dilma Loihi, maybe not necessarily, Ad Kan L'Ka'ami Beis Shammai Hosam Ela Ahitzah, maybe Beis Shammai is only saying the limitation applies to Hitzah, which after all is one of the 39 Melachas. So therefore, they would say that an actual malacha you can do on Yom Tov only for Tzodach Eichel Nefesh. Aval Atil Toloi. Maybe this Shammai would not disagree when it comes to Tiltul. Here, you're not talking about when he's throwing down the fruit through the skylight. It doesn't involve carrying it from one Rishus to another. It involves just moving it from the roof, throwing it down through the skylight. So maybe therefore, so not necessarily would that statement in our Mishnah be correct according to Beis Shammai either. So the Gemara says, still, after all, yeah, Otu Tiltu Lav Tzodach Haitzahu. After all, the whole point is, how do you begin Haitzah? You begin by picking up something. And really, the reason why moving certain things on Shabbos and Yom Tov is also in the first place, the idea behind the concept of Mukta, one idea is because you might come to carry it out on Shabbos. Well, therefore, in that case, the question is, so then you shouldn't be allowed to pick up anything on Shabbos or Yom Tov because you might carry it out. So Rashi says, okay, because people wouldn't be able to withstand such a thing. You have to have Oneg Shabbos, you have to have Simchas Yom Tov. So the Chachamim had to allow you to carry certain things around your house, but the Chachamim still restricted what you're allowed to carry inside your house and what you're allowed to pick up so that you remember not to carry outside. So therefore, so Beis Shammai might well say, given that we allow Haitzah only for Eichel Nefesh, nothing else, therefore we're going to say that yes, the Chachamim will have imposed details of Tiltul that are now not allowed either, because Tiltul leads to Haitzah, and therefore that yes, they might well say that Mashil and Peiris is not Mutter on Yom Tov either, whereas Beis Hillel would say that it is. So that's how we can understand. The first Mishnah would be going according to Beis Hillel, and the end of our second Mishnah, Ein Ben Yom Tov L'Shabbos, would be like Beis Shammai that says that when it comes to not only Melachos D'Oraisa, but even certainly Sodom D'Rabbanan, the ones that are also on Shabbos are also on Yom Tov as well, unless they're directly related to Eichel Nefesh. And therefore, by Mashil and Peiris, it's not Eichel Nefesh, because you're not bringing down the fruit in order to eat it. You bring down the fruit to prevent it from getting ruined, and Beis Shammai is not going to allow that. Okay. The next few Mishnayos and the Gemara on them, almost till the end of the Perek, are going to be dealing, or actually pretty much till the end of the Perek, till the end of the Masechta, are going to be dealing with matters of Tchum. Now, we learned about the Tchum back in Eruvim, but there we were focusing, there it was in connection with Shabbos, and therefore we were focusing more on the Tchum of the person. How far outside the city are you allowed to walk on Shabbos? On Yom Tov, we have a different thing. It's true also that you can't walk beyond a certain distance, but there's another consideration. Since on Yom Tov you're allowed to carry, then you have to look at the Tchum of the object. An object that belongs to you, the basic idea is going to be that an object that belongs to you cannot go past your Tchum even if somebody else is carrying it. So that's going to be the subject of this and the next few Mishnahs. So the Mishnah starts off, HaBehemer VaHakelim Kiragle HaBailim. An animal, or kalim, which includes utensils and clothes and whatever, those go according to the feet of the owner. In other words, you can only take them as far as the owner himself can go. So wherever his tchum is, whether he didn't make an Eruv tchumin, and therefore he has the tchum of the city, whether he made an Eruv tchumin, and therefore his tchum is shifted over, whatever the case, the object cannot leave that area either, even if somebody else is taking it. If a person gives his animal to his son to watch for him, or to a shepherd, then they still also go according to the owner. Because just because he gave it to them to watch doesn't mean that he wants it to get their tchum. As far as shepherds, actually, we'll see in the Gemara. It depends. There's certain considerations that we'll see in the Gemara about shepherds. The halacha actually, as brought in Shulchan Aruch, is there's a difference between a son and a shepherd. That a son, you always say it goes according to the tchum of the owner, whereas a shepherd, as the Gemara is going to say, it depends. Kalim ham yuchodim la'echad min ha'achan shebabayis. What happens if you have a bunch of brothers, their father passed away, so they took over the house, they're still continuing to live jointly in the house, they haven't divided it up yet, so everything belongs in common to all of them. But let's say you have certain things in the house that one of them particularly uses. You have, let's say, a suit that fits him that doesn't fit the other ones, so therefore he's the one who wears it all the time. Harei lo kiraglav, then it goes according to his feet, meaning if he decides, let's say, to make an Erev Tchumin in a certain direction, then he can take those clothing in that direction. V'she'en miyuchadin, ones that are not specific to one of them, but rather all of them use it in common, then it goes according to the tchum that all of them have in common. So in other words, let's say, for example, so Rashi gives an example. Let's say one of them put an Eruv tchumin down 2,000 amas to the north of the city, and the rest of them did not. So now, they can't carry it south of the city at all, because he has a share in it, and his tchum doesn't extend south of the city. And vice versa, he can't carry it north beyond the 2,000 amas because that's outside their tchum. So it would come out, as the Gemara is going to say, let's say if some of them made an Eruv tchum in 2,000 amas to the north and others made an Eruv tchum in 2,000 amas to the south, then they won't be able to move this keli on Yom Tov at all. Because now their tchumim don't overlap at all. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Hashoyo kli mechavera me'erev Yom Tov. If a person borrows a keli from somebody else on Erev Yom Tov, Keragle Yashoyel, then it goes according to the feet of the one who borrowed it. Because it was Kodesh Shvisa by him, Bein HaShmoshes. That is when the Tchum of an object locks in, just like Tchum of a person, and therefore, so he borrowed it, and he had it in his possession on a Bein HaShmoshes when Yom Tov was starting. Therefore, it goes according to his Tchum. The Yom Tov, on the other hand, he borrowed it on Yom Tov, Keragle Amashul, then it goes according to the feet of the one from whom he borrowed it. Because then it was Kone Shvisa by him. V'chein ha'isha sh'shalem echaberta, the same way, if a woman borrows from her friend, tavlin u'mayim u'melach, le'isasa, spices, or water, or salt, for a dough that she's making on Yom Tov, so spices for a pot of food, and water, and water maybe also, and salt maybe also, or maybe for a dough, then it goes according to the feet of both of them, because what happens is, so now the pot of food that you have, there's food in there that was Kona Shvisa by Rachel, and you have the spices that were Kona Shvisa by Leah, and the same thing with the dough, you have, let's say, the flour was Kona Shvisa by Rachel, the water and the salt were Kona Shvisa by Leah, so therefore you can only take the dough or the food in a plate to the area where both of them have in common, same idea. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, Poter B'mayim, Rabbi Yehuda says, when it comes to the water, he's Poter, you don't worry about the tchum of the water, the place for Eben Mamish, because the water is not really noticeable in the water is not really noticeable in the dish or in the dough. So Rashi explains, based on what we're going to learn in the Gemara, we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow, Beis Hashem, that we're talking about where it's a very thick stew, so therefore like a cholent or something, so the water is not really noticeable in it. As far as the salt, then, you could argue it's also not noticeable, but we're talking about like coarse salt. We're talking like kosher salt, which is very large, and therefore the grains of it are still visible. So therefore, that's why Rabbi Yehuda would say the salt matters, but the water, since you anyway don't see it in the finished product, in the cholent, or in the dough, then therefore Rabbi Yehuda says that doesn't count, and we don't have to worry about the tchum of the water, or the owner of the water, that is. So the Gemara starts off, when we said that if a person gives an animal to a shepherd, then it still goes according to the tchum of the owner. So the Gemara says, Masnissin deloy k'Rav Dosa. Our Mishnah does not seem to go like Rav Dosa. The Tanya, Rav Dosa Omer, but Amri la Abba Shol Omer. Some say Abba Shol said, Halakeach behema mechaveira me'erav yamdiv. If a person buys an animal from somebody else, erav yamdiv, even if he only handed it over to him, so if he only did the actual kinyan on yamtiv, harehi kiragle alakeach. Reb Doser, Abba Shol says it goes according to the buyer because he paid money for it on erev yamtiv. And similarly, similarly, if a person gives an animal to a shepherd to watch, even if he only actually gave it to him on yamtiv, then it goes like the tchum of the shepherd. So our Mishnah said it goes according to the tchum of the owner. Seems to be not like Reb Doser. Rashi mentions something about over here about the roya involving lekeach and moicha. Rashi says bein moicha bein lekeach intends that has a certain intention. So the Maharam Shif points out that Rashi may have had a girsa over here. So the Rosh has a similar girsa that there's not two cases here in the Gemara. We have two cases: one where Reuven bought an animal from Shimon, and the other where Reuven gives his animal to Shimon the shepherd. The Rosh has a girsa, and Maharam Shif says it seems that Rashi had this girsa as well, that it's one case. Reuven bought an animal from Shimon and gave it to Levi the shepherd. Anyway, so on the face of it then, so Reb Doser or Abba Shol is saying that it's Koina Shvisa, that goes according to the tchum of the shepherd, or of the shepherd, and our Mishnah said it doesn't. So the Gemara says, no, I feel a tamer of Dosa. You could even say that our Mishnah goes like Rav Dosa. But like Kasha, can be Roya Echad, can be Shnei Royim. There's no contradiction because one case is talking about there's one shepherd and one is where there's two shepherds. Now, what does that mean? There's several different explanations among the Rishonim what that means. Rashi says it means that Roya Echad means there's only one shepherd in town. So therefore, everybody who has an animal gives it necessarily. They give it to that shepherd. He has a monopoly over here. So therefore, so everybody has in mind that where should the behemoth be koneh shvisa by the shepherd. So even if he only gave it to him after Yom Tov began, they already knew before Yom Tov that it's going to be going there, and therefore it's considered that it was koneh shvisa by him. Somewhat similar to the way, you know, you have with Tumim, we learned back in Erevin, that a person can have in mind, Erev Shabbos, that I'm going to be koneh shvisa in such a place within 2,000 amos of me, and that works and he's koneh shvisa there. So the same thing over here. They had in mind before Yom Tov. They knew already on Yom Tov itself we're going to be giving the animal to the shepherd to watch. But we already know we're going to be doing that because he's the only one in town. Therefore, it's koneh shvisa by him, and it goes according to his tchum. On the other hand, Reb Doser is talking about. On Mishnah, so Reb Doser is talking about where there's only one shepherd in town. Reb Doser is talking about where there's two or more shepherds in town. So you don't know, to begin with, which one it's going to end up by. So therefore, it goes according to the Bailim, unless he gave it to the shepherd before Yom Tov. So there's that. There's a number of other explanations. The Rif just says generically that we established that our Mishnah is talking about two Royim, and you have all the Noisik Kalim on the Rif have several different explanations of what the Rif means by that. Does he mean, like Rashi, that it depends whether there's one shepherd or two shepherds in town? Does he mean maybe that if you have, that he gave it to two shepherds, and he didn't specify which one of them he wants to watch it? So therefore you could say that it's not Karnish Vista by either one of them, because he didn't make it clear in advance which one he wants it to be Karnish Vista by. And you could say, he doesn't want, after all, that it's going to be restricted in the amount of space that it can go in. So if we said that it went according to both their tchumim, that could end up restricting where it can go exactly. So therefore, he might not want that. He might want it to remain with his tchum. So if he gave it to one of them before Yom Tov, that's different. But if he gave it on Yom Tov, he might not. It could be a matter of brera, that he hasn't chosen yet which one he wants to take care of it. And we could be going according to the opinion, as we're going to discuss later, that Rabbi Yochanan says ein brera. So you have several, and you have those, and you have several other possibilities of what it means, roya echad or shnei royim. Okay, but in any case, Reb Dosa does not necessarily have to be disagreeing with our Mishnah. And the Gemara says, dekanami, in fact, you can see that from the wording of the Mishnah, dekatani, libnoi or leroya, because the Mishnah said that he gave it to his son or to a shepherd. So shmamina, so that proves it. In other words, the point is, the person has a lot of sons. You can also be where there's a lot of shepherds. And we're saying, in both cases, it goes according to the owner, implying that if it was only one shepherd, then it would be different, like Reb Dosa is saying. Okay. Amar, Rabbi Labachona, Amar Rabbi Yechon, halacha k'Reb Dosa. The halacha is like Reb Dosa, that it makes a difference whether there's one shepherd or two. So the question, me, Amar Rabbi Yechon, and Hachi. But did Rabbi Yochanan really say that? Well, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, halacha k'stam mishnah. Rabbi Yochanan says a general rule that the halacha is like a stam mishnah. Utsnan ha-behema v'akim k'dag v'abaylim. We started our mishnah by saying that an animal and kalim go according to the feet of the owner, implying that it's an absolute thing. What are you telling me? Rabbi Dosa is saying that it goes k'dag v'haroya. So what? We just established that the Mishnah is talking about where there's two royim, and therefore it remains in the tchum of the owner. And Reb Dosa is talking about where there's one. So the halacha is like Reb Dosa, where there's one shepherd, whether it means, again, there's one shepherd in town, or you gave it to only one shepherd, or actually, so the Ramban has a different explanation of it. Also, he says they're talking about, let's say, two, it means that there's two shepherds. One of them did Meshicha on it before Yom Tov, and then the other one did Meshicha on it only on Yom Tov. So then we can be saying, in other words, that only the one who did Meshicha Erev Yom Tov, it would go according to his tchum. Okay, so therefore, so there's no contradiction. We can say the halacha is like a dosa, and it still doesn't contradict our mission. More on this topic, Tananabon, and Shnaim Shishalu Cholok Echad B'Shurfus, if two people borrowed a shirt in B'Shurfus, so Reuven has a shirt, and Shimon and Levi are borrowing it from them. So, for example, Shimon wants to use it in the morning to go to the Beis Medrash. Levi wants to use it later in the day to go to a wedding, to go to a Shevet Brachas. Now, suppose Zeh Erev Olav L'Tzofen V'Zeh Erev Olav L'Dorim. Suppose that Shimon made an Erev Tchumen toward the north and Levi made an Erev Tchumen toward the south. Zeh She'Erev Olav L'Tzofen. So the one who made the Erev, Shimon, who made the Erev in the north, Mahalach L'Tzofen Kedag L'Misha Erev Olav L'Dorim, he can take this shirt only as far as Levi would be able to take it with his Tchumen. So in other words, it's more restricted. So if let's say, for example, each one of them put their Erev 1,000 amas away from the city, so they have an overlap between them of 1,000 amas, so therefore you're allowed to carry it in that area. So therefore you're going to be allowed to carry it a little bit north of the city, but not the full 2,000 amas, only 1,000 amas. V'zesh Erev Olav L'Dorim, and Levi, who made the Erev Tchumen to the south, Mahalach L'Dorim, Kedag L'Misha Erev Olav L'Tzofen, vice versa, he can take it only 1,000 amas outside the city, because that's only as far as Shimon is allowed to go. V'imitzu is a tchum, so therefore, if they made the tchum exactly between them, in other words, they both put their Erev Tchumen 2,000 amas away in each direction, Hareza lo yuzi zenem emekayim, then they're not going to be allowed to move the shirt from its place, because there's no tchum, because the two tchumim do not overlap.
They overlap by 1 inch.
Well, they don't overlap at all, same.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Itma. So in this discussion, in this connection, we have a discussion on a machloit v'samirun. Shnaim shalokhu chavis or behema b'shurfus. Suppose that two people bought a barrel of wine on Erev Yom Tov, and they bought it on Erev Yom Tov, intending to divide it up on Yom Tov. They bought a barrel of wine, or they brought an animal, and they intend to divide up the barrel or the animal on Yom Tov. Rav Amachovis Muteres Behema Asura. Rav says the barrel, each one is going to be allowed to take his portion of wine to the place where he where he's allowed to go. Or Behema Asura, but the animal, the Asur, you could only take in the play in the area where they both have in common, like the shurut, for reasons that the Gemara is going to discuss in a second. Or Shmuel Amachovis Nami Asura. Shmuel says that the barrel also is going to be Asur because he holds Ein Breira. So therefore, when they split up the barrel, they split up the wine. How can you say that this one has the wine that was meant for him all along? Not necessarily. You in Breira, this is going to be. We're going to have the starting today and continuing over tomorrow. Best Hashem, the whole a major sugya on the issue of Breira. Actually, it's going to continue on Daf Lamed Tes as well. Yeah, so Shmuel holds Ein Breira, so therefore you can't say that the wine that he took on Yom Tov is the same wine that he owned from before Yom Tov. So therefore it comes out that he's carrying something on Yom Tov outside of the Tchum, the way it was Kohen Shvisa. Tosfos, by the way, makes a distinction between Toila B'das Acherim, where Shmuel might hold that you could say Breira, where it depends on somebody else's decision, versus Toila B'das Atzmei, where it depends on his own decision, what he's going to take. So Shmuel holds Ein Breira. So the question is, Maika Sava Rav? Fine, but why does Rav hold that the Chobis would be Mutter and the Behema is also? E Kasava Yesh Breira, if Rav holds that there is such a thing as Breira, after the Behema Tishteri, then it should be Mutter, even with the animal. The E Kasava Ein Breira, after the Chobis Nami Asura, and if he holds Ein Breira, then he should say, like Shmuel, the barrel is also. Why is he distinguishing and saying one is mutter and one is asur? The answer is la'olam kasava yesh breira. The answer is Rav could hold that yesh breira. So that explains why the chobis is mutter. When the person takes his half of the wine retroactively, this is the wine that he owned as of the beginning of Yomtiv. What about the animal though? The shanya behemah is different by an animal because yanki tchumin mehadod. Because the parts that belong to the different tchumen are getting nourished one from the other. In other words, the animal is one unit. It has the blood circulates around its whole body. Everything else circulates. So therefore, so you have, when you're shechting it, you have a part of it that was, that you know, you have in that part, there's parts that, that were, what do you call it, that belong to the other tchum. So Amri le Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi le Rav, but Rav Kahana and Rav Asi say to Rav, what are you talking about? Isu mukta le choshesu, le isu tchumen choshesu. What are you talking about? We see in this case they're not concerned about the isu mukta, meaning, in other words, after all, so Rashi explains what isu mukta. Each one thinks to himself, the other guy's piece is off limits. He owns half of it. I own half of it. His half is off limits to me. So therefore, he doesn't have that in mind, that he's going to be able to eat it on Yom Tov. Nevertheless, we're still saying that they're allowed to shecht it and eat it right here without carrying it anyplace else, even though you could say Yankee Mahadodi, they nourished, each part got nourished from the other. We don't worry about that. So why would the Chachamim be concerned about Tchumin and say that it should be also? If you're going to say it's also, then it should be also to shecht the animal right here either, because Yankee Mahadodi. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation of Rashi because they say, what do you mean? After all, the other person's portion is not really mukta. The fact is, the other one could give it to him as a gift, and then it would be completely mukta. So he doesn't completely put it out of mind. He knows that there's a way it could be mukta to him on Yom Tov. Rather, Tosfos brings from the Rashbam, the isur mukta, what we mean over here is the fact that the animal grows and gets fatter on Yom Tov. You're still saying, nevertheless, when it comes to Yom Tov, we hold like Rabbi Yehuda as far as Mukta. This is Tosfos' Shitta, that we hold like Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to Mukta. We hold that not only by Nodah, but anyway, if we say that we hold like Rabbi Yehuda by Mukta, then that fat and that extra weight that it gained on Yom Tov should be also, because it wasn't Roy before Yom Tov. It didn't even exist before Yom Tov. And yet we're not worried about that. So why are you worried about that? So why are you worried about Isu Tchumim? Just because it's growing, because it's attached to the other person's part. Rabbi Yehuda holds that Mukta, so we hold that Rabbi Yehuda has a broader conception of Mukta, as we talk about many times in our Masechta, and Rabbi Shimon has a narrower one on Yom Tov. Right, Tosfos holds we hold like Rabbi Yehuda. The Ra'ah has a third explanation of Mukta over here. He says by Mukta, Rav Kahana and
we hold like
Rav Shimon on Yom Tov. Only by Nolan do we hold like Rav Yehuda.
On Yom Tov and on Shabbos.
On Shabbos we're a little more makel on Nolan to a certain extent. Anyway, let's
finish. Right,
let's finish up with you anyway. So the Ra'ah explains that Rav Kahana and Rav Ashi, when they speak of Mukta, they're talking about a different thing. We know that if an animal is pregnant, then you shech the mother, then you're allowed to eat the baby as well. It's a ben pekua. You don't even need to shech the baby. On the other hand, if it sticks out a limb outside, then that limb becomes osur. Basur sheyotza put the mechitzase, it's called. And the halacha is that when you shech the baby, you have to cut off that limb and you're not allowed to eat it. That limb is trick. So Rav Kahana and Rav Asi are saying to Rav, if you're concerned about Yanki Mahadadi, that parts of the animal are taking nourishment one from the other, then by that logic, the animal over there that was in the womb and stuck out a limb, not only that limb should be also, the whole animal should be also. And yet we know that that's not so. So what makes you think that by Tchumen that should be a factor? And the Gemara says, Shosik Rav. Rav was quiet, which again, like we had previously in our Masechta, does that mean Rav was quiet because he didn't have an answer and conceded to them? Or does it mean just the opposite, that he didn't bother answering? That's such an easy, it's such an easy answer that he didn't bother, right?
What did he look like? He was like, come on.
So the Gemara says, my Havia law, what's the bottom line? What's the bottom line? What is the halacha over here? Rabbi Hoshi, Amar Yesh Breira, Rabbi Yechon, Amar Ein Breira. So that's machlokas. Is there such a thing as Breira? And that, this is obviously relevant not only here, but in many other places in Shas. Do we say when something is split up, we say that retroactively that was what belonged to him all along, or this is what had that status or that designation all along, or do we say Ein Breira, such a thing doesn't work? So again,
Breira
literally means choosing. So it means when I choose that this portion is going to be mine, for example, do we say that retroactively this was my portion all along, or do we say Ein Breira, the fact that I'm choosing now that this is my portion doesn't mean anything previously. This may have been part of this, may have been your portion. So in this case, for example, in the case of the barrel of wine.
Is my choice retroactive or is my choice Nikanah?
Exactly. So according to Shmuel, we would say, and Rabbi Yochanan, we would say Ein Breira. So therefore, even in the case of a barrel of wine, if we're dividing it up on Yom Tov, doesn't matter. I'm taking half of it, but what I'm taking may well include a part that was yours and was koina your tchum at the beginning of Yom Tov, and therefore no good. Whereas Rav and Rabbi Hoshi say Yesh Breira, and therefore there's no problem. Therefore, there's no problem with that. You can divide up the barrel of wine. Only in the case of the animal, are we saying there's the other factor of Yanki Mahadadi that Rav says we have to consider. Therefore, that's a special case. But ordinarily, we would say Yesh Breira. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with a discussion with getting into this matter of Breira. When do we say Breira and when not?
Shekayach.
Yeah.